et al. Versus Jana Hall, Mr. Wilson, Mr. Schoen.
Good morning, Your Honor.
Good morning, gentlemen. Mr. Wilson, do you wish to reserve any time for rebuttal?
2 minutes, please, Your Honor.
All right. Give me just a second here. I'll get out of this last case and... this one. All right, you may begin.
May it please the court, my name is Drew Wilson from Richmond, and I represent the appellate. This is a workers' compensation case rising out of an accident that occurred September 5th of 1978, in which the claimant, Ms. Hall, injured her right knee. The claimant also has an arthritic disease in multiple joints in her body. And the fundamental question in the claim right now is whether this is rheumatoid arthritis, an autoimmune condition, which is unrelated to her accident, or whether it's traumatically induced polyarthritis.
Mr. Wilson, let me ask a kind of a fundamental question here in my mind. At the time the award was entered, there was a medical record in the file from Dr. Fitzgerald in which, and this is dated January 20th, 1984, and he comes up with a diagnosis of rheumatoid arthritis, and he says it is due to the occurrence described in item 11, which is the injury she sustained when she fell down a flight of steps. Now, nobody challenged that before the commission, and they could have. Why doesn't the issue preclusion of res judicata preclude you from raising it now?
Well, number one, I would say the claimant didn't raise that as an issue, and the commission also did not raise that as an issue.
And I think also, an issue.
Right, and I think the other point would be that the nature of workers' compensation claims is that they are ongoing, and we have ongoing conditions.
If this had been a change of condition situation, I think I'd see your point. I think Judge Petty's question goes to this is basically your client seeks to deny the continued payment for the treatment for something that was accepted as compensable back in the 1980s. And I guess our question is, why aren't you stopped from asserting that now when it was accepted at the time as being compensable?
Well, I think what we agreed to was an award for the medical benefits to the right knee, and we still say we're under that award. It's just the multiple arthritic condition, which we say we're not responsible.
But if I read your argument correctly, you're not saying, and correct me if I'm wrong, you're not saying that these drugs aren't required to treat what I'll term traumatic arthritis. Your claim is that it's not traumatic arthritis, it's rheumatoid arthritis.
That's correct.
But the issue as to whether the arthritis was compensable was decided back when the commission entered its order.
Well, the order I have goes back to 79, I believe. That's the original.
The permanent partial award I've got is March 15th of 1985.
Okay. That would be the PPD award.
I mean, they have paid for these drugs all this time.
Right.
And all of a sudden, two new doctors come in and say, oh, well, she wasn't this pain in her knee is not related to her injury. And it seems to me you're trying to relitigate something that had been decided by the commission years ago.
Well, I would say a couple of things. One, the PPD rating is for a specific body part. So it's an injury to the right knee and the problems she has had as a result of that. We're not the issue of the polyarthritis, the arthritis in multiple joints. She's not getting awarded PPD benefits for those things, for the multiple joints. The other piece I would make is, or the other argument I would make is, the commission always says that we can pay medical benefits without prejudice and to later dispute the claim. And the reason for that is to encourage payment of the claimant's medical bills. Go ahead and get your treatment. Usually it comes up in the context of contesting the whole claim, but when the commission would decide, hey, you've paid for this for so long, it's unfair to do that, usually that's in the context of the statute of limitations. You can't sort of pay this until the statute runs and then all of a sudden decide not to pay it and argue the statute of limitations. We haven't done that in this case. We're not arguing the statute.
If we get past the res judicata issue, I mean, and deal with the merits, and we would basically have two remaining assignments of error that one deals with, we got offsetting doctors, the usual offsetting doctors situation, except usually instead of one versus one, we've got three versus three, three of whom examined the patient, three of whom did not, and you basically don't like the credibility assignment the commission made and want us to reverse that. And you know the law's against you on that.
I do, but I do think that, and this ties into my other point, in that the commission should have allowed us to have an independent medical examination.
Well,
should have appointed.
That's the other assignment of error, and there the statute is very clear. It uses the word may. Now,
right.
I know in some cases the two appellate courts of the Commonwealth have said that shall sometimes means shall and sometimes shall means may.
Right.
But I don't think either one of us have ever said that may ever means shall.
Correct. And I would say, number one, I would challenge that the evidence showed that the treating physicians considered that all the treating physicians considered this related. I think Dr. Giuliano had said he thought it was temporally related, which I don't think is the same as causation. Dr. Wilson, in one of his later records from 2007, and of course he retired in 2007, he talks about long-standing inflammatory spondyloarthropathy, which one of our experts says, you know, that's not traumatically induced.
You go back as far as Dr. Fitzgerald, and Dr. Fitzgerald said it was traumatically induced in his medical reports.
He did, and because of these discrepancies and these reports, I think the commission should have allowed us to have the IME of the claimant.
Doesn't,
we didn't.
Doesn't that argument basically mean that every time there's a dispute among doctors, the commission is obligated to break the tie?
I don't think so. In this case, in other cases where this comes about, the employer normally has a right to go out and get its own physician to do an employer's medical examination under 65.2-607. In this case, we couldn't do that because compensation was no longer an issue. We had paid her all of her indemnity benefits, her compensation for her lost wages and PPD. That was no longer an issue. All that was an issue was medical, and we had no ability to get an examination by our own physicians.
Well, didn't one of your physicians, Dr. Patel, I think it was, say an examination isn't necessary due to the volume of records in this case?
He did, Your Honor. Nevertheless, the commission frequently discounts, record review opinions, as they did in this case.
Except
based
that's
on the fact that
expert saying
doesn't
that
happen.
An examination isn't even necessary.
Right. Well, that's one of them. Yes, Your Honor. But our problem is the commission discounts those opinions.
We don't get to second guess that.
Well, I would say, based on the medical evidence and the conflict in the medical evidence and the reasons given by the commission for not giving us the IME, that it would be somehow be micromanaging the claim. That's not what we're trying to do. We're trying to get her examined and an opinion.
If I look at these medical reports chronologically, it looks to me like you could reasonably conclude that originally there was some traumatic arthritis involved in her knee. She has since developed systemic rheumatoid arthritis, which would include every joint in her body, including her knee. But if you read the medical reports like that, wouldn't the two-cause rule require continued compensation? If there are two causes to the injury, one of which is compensable and one of which is not, the injury is compensable and medical payments are required?
I don't think so. I think it's an either-or proposition as far as you have this polyarthritis going on, and what is that, you know, what is causing that? If it's the autoimmune disorder, even Dr. Will, whose deposition we took, agrees that's wholly unrelated to the accident.
But is there any evidence that she had this autoimmune arthritis at the time the knee was originally injured?
I don't believe at the time that she was injured. This is something that, although we have Dr. Giuliano's, this is his 1980 opinion, where he states that she has inflammatory arthritis that seems to be temporally related to the accident. That's his 1980 record.
And the commission is not persuaded that she has RA, is that correct?
That is my understanding. I think they're going with Dr. Wilson's. And part of this, I think, part of the difficulty is some of these terms are I don't know that there's a clearly defined term for these. I know that Dr. Wilson uses the term inflammatory arthritis, and our folks also use that term in relation to rheumatoid arthritis. But I think the folks we had review the records would say it's autoimmune arthritis. That's the underlying cause. The underlying cause is not the trauma to the knee, which somehow migrated to the other parts of the body.
I just want to point out, you're into your rebuttal. You could continue or reserve as you wish.
Okay. I'd like to reserve my time. Thank you.
Mr. Schoen?
Thank you, Your Honor. May it please the court, my name is Darren Schoen from Bedford, and I represent the appellee, Jenna Hall. I'm here out of an abundance of caution. Obviously, I feel very strongly that the full commission and the deputy commissioner got this case correct. I have 4 points to address. First of all, as far as the characterization of this claim and how it was brought before the commission, I think it's been mischaracterized by the appellants. In their brief, they make it sound as if she is pursuing some novel and unique treatment and that she's pursuing this. They cut her off. They just stopped paying. She'd been receiving this medication treatment for years.
Well, that begs the question of who has the burden here to establish this, that it has been paid, for quite a while. It was terminated. Is the burden upon the employer to justify the termination, or, as in the case of most medical benefits, is the burden upon the claimant to establish medical necessity?
Section 65.2, it can be looked at both ways. In this case, because there's an ongoing lifetime medical award, we think the claimants have a right to rely upon that, a lifetime medical award. In fact, most of my clients really believe they clutch to these
life. That's the question that Judge Petty raised initially, which is basically this was accepted as compensable way back in, at least in the 80s, if not immediately after the accident. And the insurance company's been paying for the medication. There's no change in condition suggestion here. As you point out, they simply cut her off. So why didn't you raise some sort of a res judicata or collateral estoppel claim here?
Because procedurally, I would submit that because they didn't file a change in condition application, the burden really isn't upon her. The burden should be upon them. It moves into my next point on here as far as what is the standard of review. In the appellant's brief, they indicated that it's their position that this is a de novo review that there's an abuse of discretion, which I was looking for an abuse of discretion in the transcripts, in the appendix, and they're alleging an actual error of law.
Havilsar versus All American Carpet Rugs, whether disputed medical treatment is compensable as other necessary medical attention within the definition of the code section, presents a mixed question of law and fact, which this court reviews de novo. Why isn't that our standard here?
The claimant prevailed below. We have to look at this in the light most favorable to the claimant. Now, as far as how this matter was brought,
all the cases I've seen say that we review medical awards de novo, the necessity of medical awards de novo.
The appellants actually cite to a couple of cases that have raised an eyebrow, Your Honor. Cura versus Commonwealth, where this is a workers' comp case where the deputy commissioner actually issued 34 show cause orders, which exceeded the deputy commissioner's authority. They also cite to a criminal death penalty case, Porter versus Commonwealth, for the proposition of an error of law, where in that case the circuit court judge actually stated on the record that, I believe this, he didn't have the authority over courtroom security. And I believe this court addressed that and corrected that mistake. I would submit, as far as it's being brought by the appellants here, they're saying there is an error of law without citing to what error of law was made. They don't point to any error of law. This has to be, as you stated when Mr. Wilson was presenting, there's great deference given to the fact finder here, the deputy commissioner and the full commission, as to the weight of the medical evidence and how they are to look at it. They give deference to the treating physician. If the treating physician or physician's opinion is shaded by doubt, then they can look to other medical opinions. The appellant state, well, it is shaded by doubt without actually pointing to anything. This doctor was, Dr. Wills, was actually deposed, questioned, both counsel. I would submit a clear reading of the record shows there's no doubt in his opinion that this is what he recommends. There's the Celebrex, the OxyContin, and the Percocet, which is what he's recommended. He has for years, and he stood very firmly in his opinion. As far as other doctors on this, we have two physicians, I believe it's two, it might have been three, that they've retained the appellants out of Florida who never have treated the claimant, never laid hands on her. They looked at some records and rendered an opinion favorable to the insurance carrier. The commission looked at the records and made a very, the full commission's opinion itself, very short to the point. They agreed with the deputy commissioner. In light most favorable to this court, I would submit, has to look at this in the light most favorable to the prevailing party. There's no error of law.
You say that, but our case law is replete with representations that this is a de novo review.
Well, in a mixed question situation, typically, we accept the facts in the light most favorable of the party that prevailed below,
right,
provided there's evidence to support those facts. But the de novo review is of the application of the law by the commission to those facts.
Right.
That's generally how we approach these things. So
okay.
I think probably we're talking past each other to some extent,
okay,
because both things are true. We do a de novo review with respect to how the commission applied the law to the facts. But in terms of which doctor has more credibility versus the other doctor, that those are issues of fact that the commission, we defer right. to the commission, provided there's evidence in the record to support their conclusions.
And okay, it's my understanding that he's claiming there has been an abuse of discretion here, and without citing to an actual abuse of discretion.
I understand his. I don't want to put words in his mouth. My understanding of the argument essentially is that because we have conflicting statements, positions among the various doctors involved here, the commission erred as a matter of law by not appointing an independent doctor to sort of break the tie, if you will. And that would be a de novo review because right. now we're talking about a question of statutory construction. You know, what the word may means in the statute.
So I didn't see in their brief where they actually stated that.
Well, that's what I understood as oral argument to okay. in a nutshell.
And to move to my last point here, as far as under Section 65.2606, it does say may. It's a discretionary statute. The Commonwealth does not, the Commission does not have to apply this. It's there as a tool for them when they believe it's necessary. That's all I have.
Thank you very much.
Your Honor, briefly, Your Honors, I think the Commission erred by not granting our request for an independent medical evaluation. I think that would inform the Commission, particularly in a case like this, where you not only have conflicting opinions of...
Well, what if we disagree with you on that? What if we say may actually does mean may and not mean shall? Where does that leave you with respect to... I mean, does that defeat the entire...
I think it's an abuse of discretion then under the particular facts of this case. Particularly because we have no ability, the defendants have no ability to have the patient examined, which is important to the commission. The commission thinks that's important. Mr. Schoen,
whose decision should it be whether a independent medical examination is necessary? Yours or the commission's?
It should be the commission's decision.
And here they deemed it not necessary.
That's right. I would say the reasons they gave for it were not adequate and actually they were incorrect. One of their reasons was they said we had a right to have her examined by our own physician. That's not accurate because compensation's not an issue in this case, and that's what the statute says, that the claimant has to submit to an examination when compensation is at issue. So we would ask that the commission be
assuming
reversed.
That is an error of law, you know, but does it matter? In other words, a total of six doctors, as I understand this record, examined the patient here, and there was a conflict among their testimony. It basically broke down to 3-3, as I understand the record. The commission certainly could have appointed an independent doctor. That's what the statute says. They chose not to. If they assuming they chose not to simply because they elected to believe some of those doctors and saw no need to get any further medical input on the subject, I guess my question is, what's wrong with that?
My time is up, if I may respond.
Please respond.
I think that the problem is that this additional information would better inform the commission, and we're talking about an autoimmune disorder that the claimant would benefit from presumably different therapies than she's getting now if it is a misdiagnosis. And I also think there's some discrepancy between the opinions of the actual physicians as to what's being caused, and I think that the IME would inform the commission better in its decision.
All right. Thank you very much for your argument.
Thank you.
We'll greet counsel and then take up Keith versus Commonwealth.